What is up, guys? Welcome back to Come At Me, Bro. This is episode 15. I am one of your hosts, Joey, joined alongside Drew.
Go Vols.
Tyler.
I hate getting poop on my finger. It is the worst. I've found out that my son is like, he is a hot grenade that you do not know if he's going to go off or not. And when you're changing his diaper, it is miserable to get poop on your finger. Because I know that's what the Saints feel like and the Chiefs feel like right now, is having a giant turd on their finger. It just sucks. It's not fun.
Wow. Well, I for one am glad you clarified that it's your son doing the pooping and not a toilet paper malfunction going on your side.
Yeah, I mean, if you really want to mess with people, find a way to hack into their Instagram and just say, like, oh, I got poop on my finger. Like, that's how you really screw someone's identity up.
Okay, well, wow, that took a turn I did not expect. But yeah, so we had some football this weekend. The NFC Championship between the Saints and the Rams, and then the AFC Championship between the Chiefs and the Patriots. They were good games overall. I feel like they both went to overtime. That's the first time we've had both championship games go to overtime. We had quite a few points scored in both the games as well, but we're not without their controversy, and we're going to have to kick it off with the NFL-NFC Championship. This one, so obviously the whole game is played. There are opportunities for both teams to win, but at the end of the game, the Saints at 20-20 in the game, 1:49 left on the clock. The Saints were facing a 3rd and 10 and ended up passing a 13-yard pass from Drew Brees to Tommy Lee Lewis. And then Nicole Roby Coleman made two penalties on the play that were not found or called by the referee. They went unpenalized, and the Saints did not end up scoring a touchdown on that drive because of this, most likely. From there, the game went to overtime. Drew Brees threw an interception on the Saints' offensive play, and the Rams ended up winning the game and going on to the Super Bowl. So, kicking off, Tyler, I know you feel very strongly about this controversial call. Drew, I know you and I do as well. Tyler, why do you think this is not a controversial call, or why do you think the Rams should be going to the Super Bowl even with this call not being made?
There's still 58 minutes left to be played, boys. And there was even had into overtime. Let me give you a couple facts, okay? Saints had 50 yards rushing. Saints went for two field goals early in the game that they could have gone, and said they kicked two field goals. Todd Gurley did not play. He got benched. It wasn't even that he was hurt. He just got benched. Saints were only getting 4.5 yards per play, which was I think was the least amount they've gotten all year. They did not peak. The Rams outperformed the Saints, and you can't let one call dictate the entire game. There were plenty of opportunities for the Saints. They got the ball first. They got the ball first in overtime and could have pulled a Brady and won the game. But they didn't have, they lost it. They lost the game. You can't get everything on one call. It's a sucky call. Rams had calls that went against them. Now, it wasn't the last 2 minutes, but you can definitely say it goes both ways. It's part of the game. And so I think the fact is, what the Saints can't do is they can't swallow the fact that they lost the game, that they gave away the game. The Rams were the better team.
Now, I think Drew and I agree with some of those points, just to cut in. I mean, it's not the fact that there were definitely 60 minutes to play in this game, in addition to the overtime that came after that as well. But the fact that this play was right at the end of the game is the kicker. So not only did the Saints play those 58 minutes before, but the Rams played those 58 minutes before and did not put themselves in a situation to win either. It was tied, 20-20. Both had played equally. Now you're coming down the last play right at the end, and most likely if this was completed, we would see a Saints touchdown that would end this game in a Saints win. For me, that's the factor. The fact that both these teams played the 58 minutes, penalties were not called for both sides, but won this key in the last 2 minutes of the game, it's a game changer. Drew, what are your thoughts?
It's definitely a game changer. Setting aside all the other arguments, if they throw that flag, that very obvious, egregious flag, the Saints could have even just kneeled three plays in a row and kicked a field goal, and that would have left 5 seconds on the clock at that point. So there's no denying that this missed call literally kept the game going. They could have also went for it on fourth down. I don't blame them for not. That would not have been the smart play. But there's no denying that this play kept this game going, which is why so many people are mad about it. It's why I'm mad about it. I don't know how you have that many officials on the field and enough of them don't say, no, that was clearly the pass interference, you got to throw that flag. Because they can do that. They can talk to each other and decide to throw a flag. And they decided they didn't need to, which made zero sense. But it happens. where I have started getting stuck as I've been looking at this and reading the reactions and such is the drive before that for the Rams. There's a pretty obvious face mask that was missed that would have given the Rams a first down with about 5 minutes left and had them in Saints territory. And the way they were moving the ball, I don't have a doubt that they would have scored off of that drive. So if we want to talk about game-changing plays, that's also a game-changing play. It just happened earlier enough that people aren't as worked up. Plus, the Rams won. Now, if the Rams had lost, I think that's the call we would have been talking about needing to get reviewed and was game-changing. It just worked out that this was the call instead that was game-changing. So you have two game-changing calls that realistically balanced everything out. I don't know. It's hard to swallow because I wanted the Saints to win. I really like Drew Brees, but I can't say the Saints don't deserve to be there. I can say those officials probably need to have some sort of review and punishment.
You don't need to punish referees. No, it's a bang-bang play. That last one is a bang-bang play, and many of those happen in the NFL where it wasn't called. And then you look at it slow-mo, and you're like, oh, wow, maybe that should have been called.
I don't think you have to look at it slow-mo. I think everybody watching that play, except for the officials, knew it was... The only one who didn't see it, besides the officials, was the cornerback, because he couldn't see where the ball was. All he knew was that he was going to be close, and he needed to hit the guy to make sure he didn't catch that ball. So
And the ball just happened to be in the vicinity.
It wasn't even in the vicinity.
Yes, he was.
It was behind him.
It's considerably pretty far away still.
The reason why, if the ball wasn't in the vicinity, the referee would have called it. But because the referee was looking at the ball and the cornerback and the receiver all at the same time, it all came together to look like it was a bang bang play. They never showed another replay that was not slow mo.
I saw plenty of replays that weren't slow.
I was watching it live.
Maybe I was sipping, you know, my drink or something. Or
everything.
Bathroom.
Tyler, was your house upside down at any point?
Maybe it could have been. I'm not saying it wasn't a foul. I'm saying it was a close call, and I think those calls happen all the time. But Rams outperformed the Saints. Saints had plenty of opportunities to win.
Well, in addition to that, Tyler, so if your referee is here watching the players, and let's say he misses the pass interference call, how does he miss the blatant helmet-to-helmet?
Yeah.
Because you're looking at the ball. What referees do, and this is for any referee, and I'm talking about from the young referees to the professional referees, they look at certain things and they find that, and he either blinked or was looking at something that was not in the vicinity there. And there was just no rhyme or reason for him to miss it other than the fact that he was looking somewhere else.
Are there not multiple officials that should have been watching that play?
Oh, absolutely. There is, but they're watching the holding. They're watching the offsides. They're watching the other players down the field. There's eight referees, six referees. I think there's seven or eight. But there are things you're looking at. And now NFL is going to go to an era now where they're going to be able to review penalties. But I think it should only be in the playoffs. Because then if you review every single penalty or review, you know, can you challenge a penalty, which I've been wanting to do for the last, 15 years of my life, seeing how many pass interference calls that referees missed against the Patriots. I mean, it's just mind-boggling of how many times you have a team defend another team and, you know, cause a pass interference. Because it happens all the time. You saw it in the Chiefs and Saints game. You see it where teams are getting physical. And this looked to be a clear foul. But at the end of the day, the Rams outplayed the Saints. End of story. The Rams outplayed the Saints. You can't let a one call go. You can't cry. You can cry, but no one's going to pick up your tears. Cry me a river. Sorry, Saints fans. America's known for the blame game. We blame the most recent event. Most recent event was the last play of the game. America loves to blame. Blame your ex-wife. You blame your job. You blame your bad job. You blame your boss.
I mean, the other thing to take out of this, though, Tyler, is the fact that we continue to see different players come out about this call. So you're not only seeing Saints fans and Rams fans come out, and even a lot of Rams fans are admitting that they should have lost the game, which is very entertaining to me. But the fact see all of these other professional players from tons of different teams, J.J. Watt being such a great guy in the community, he's one that came out and said, that's a terrible call. I mean, there are just so many people in this sports world, football world in particular, coming out about this call. In addition to that, Sean Payton, the coach of the Saints, already spoke with the league office as well, and the league office admitted that the referee crew screwed up. They missed not only the pass interference call, but a brutal helmet-to-helmet call, which is what the league has really been cracking down on this season and this past season as well. So the fact that both these calls are missed right at the end of the game, and the fact that the league calls to apologize, that's big, if you ask me.
Like, I mean, it's big, but what? I mean, that to me, if someone tells me, yeah, you know, the ref made a bad call, sorry. Like, that doesn't replace anything. Who gives a flying duck? I mean, like, really, the league calls me and says, yeah, we blew it. I mean, what's the league going to do? Are they going to actually, you know, Saints won. Saints actually won the game. They should have won the game, even though it was tied 20-20. And, you know, you even got the coin flip toss in overtime. And you still shot yourself in the foot.
You know, what's funny is technically, Goodell could say that it was enough of a factor that they need to replay from that point on. They shouldn't. That would be stupid. Like, yeah, I said, there was enough other stuff in the game that, again, it's an awful call. You've got to acknowledge it's a terrible call and that it did extend the game. But then you also have to be willing to acknowledge that the Rams did everything they were supposed to do and they won. I mean, 57-yard field goal to send it to overtime, that's incredible. That is not a gimme for anybody. I don't care who your kicker is in the NFL. I don't think half the kickers in the NFL could have made that field goal. So they did everything they were supposed to do. So my question for you guys then is, if we get to this point of reviewing penalties, is it only specific penalties? And is it only at specific times? And is it a challengeable thing? Or does the league determine it needs to be reviewed? You know, is it inside 2 minutes the league can decide to review it? Is it only pass interference? Because if you initiate it to where coaches can challenge a penalty, literally any play you could challenge and they could find a penalty. You know, there's holding on every play. It's just if they're holding legally or not.
Well, I can already tell you they're already reviewing one penalty. They review one penalty. It's too many men on the field.
That's true.
So they already review one penalty, and I think you'd have to you'd have to define it as a pass interference or as a a fault by the referee. I mean, soccer has done this. Soccer has created a review now for the foul. And so when the referee misses it, the soccer gets it right, and they say either a penalty kick or, you know, not a penalty kick or a foul or handball, whatever it is. It's in the box. They're most likely going to review it if they see something from upstairs. And so I think that should be the case. They should almost have it like soccer where they have the VAR and say, yeah, the referee definitely missed that one. Because the VAR pretty much already exists on the billboard when the fans are looking at it.
Yeah.
And the coach can challenge it. That's kind of the VAR system right now in terms of soccer. Now it's someone from New York that says, hey, you need to look at that penalty. That was really a messed up call.
And I guess if
it's within the 20, if it's a goal or is a, you know, touchdown. I mean, referees are trying to play games out. They're trying to let the play out, which is good
usually.
On them. Usually, yep.
There's been a few incidents this year where they've like whistled plays dead that were fumbles and such, but those things are going to happen, like you said. I feel like if you're going to do like a VAR type thing in the NFL, I think the emphasis that they need to push on the officials and then what they communicate with fans and owners and such is the officials will always be conservative. They're going to lean towards not calling for a review. It would have to be something like this, where it's pretty clear to everyone that it should have been a flag. They're not going to do close ones or nitpicky ones or something where they look at it and think, maybe, maybe not. It's got to be some clear and obvious stuff.
Yeah, and I really think that's the solution. I think the VAR is a good solution here. You set someone up in the stadium along with these other referees as opposed to just the headquarters in New York. Then when you have a controversial play like this, maybe the VAR comes down and says, hey, let's take a moment to review this play. Let's not let the next play call. It's an easy whistle. There and go. At the same point, what if we need a challenge flag to be able to play here too? If we bring in the challenge flag part, I think it should play into your current challenge flags. And I also think it should only happen at the last 2 minutes of the second quarter and the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. I think if you expand it past that, it just becomes ridiculous at that point.
All right, I'm ready for the lookalike game.
What you got?
So as most of our listeners don't know, there's a game called the lookalike game. I don't think we've done it. Have we done it on Come At Me, Bro?
I think a few times.
Okay.
Yeah, it might have been early on. Not that we're that far in.
Okay. All right, so here we go. We'll start with our boy Sean Payton. Does Sean Payton look like your mother who is angry that you did not put the dishes in the dishwasher?
Okay. My gosh.
That's not good. All right. If anyone, what I'd like everyone to do now is look at Adam Gase in his interview. Just type in Adam Gase into Google. I'll give you 3 seconds to do that. Because when I read these next couple of ones, you hopefully will see the resemblance here. Okay. Everyone done that? Good. Does Adam Gase look like someone who just received LASIK from behind Costco in an alleyway, which had a half off coupon?
Oh my gosh. Ay.
Okay, I'm going back with Tom Brady now. Does Tom Brady look like a little wimpy schoolboy who won his first kickball match on the school playground?
No. I'm gonna say okay. No to that one.
Okay. You see him like jump in the air with his like legs like flailing, like yee-hoo, yippee.
I gotta say, it was kind of endearing the fact that he's 40 years old and he still gets that excited. Like, that's kind of cool. I am not a Tom Brady fan by any means, but I like that he is excited. It'd be very easy for him to be cocky and just be like, okay, yeah, ninth time, woo, big deal. No, he's excited. I think that's pretty cool, actually.
And that's the key. The fact he's been to so many Super Bowls before, he's won so many Super Bowls before, but yet again, he's continued to be excited going back and going back again. I mean, Tyler, last night at the party, it's so hard to be a Patriots fan, isn't it?
Oh my gosh, it is. Gosh, I hate Boston fans in general. They are just total snobs. Like they go on two extremes. The one extreme is the fact that they, you know what? Yeah, you know, we won another championship. Big whoop. You know, no big deal. Oh, if they lose, they're like, oh well, we already have like 5 championships. The under end of it is like, oh my gosh, this is the most stress I've ever had in my life. It's like, are you freaking kidding me? You're in the freaking championship for the 8th straight time. What do you have to be stressed about? You should be the most relaxed person here, because who do you have on your team? The freaking Brady Bunch. It boggles my mind how much people think it stresses them out. It's like, take a chill pill, man. Anyways, does Adam Gase look like your long-lost uncle who's in debt $50,000 and suspects that he's suspected of having a drug problem and a gambling problem? Does Adam Gase look like an alien from Men in Black, where his head will split open and a little alien will come out popping out of his head, controlling the gears?
Oh my god! I think Adam Gase looks like a man who just joined the New York Jets organization.
No, that's the next one. Does Adam Gase look like he just found out he's the new head coach of the Jets and not for the Green Bay Packers?
That one's too close to home.
Yeah, there you go. There's your lookalike game.
Perfect. With that, let's head on over into the NFL AFC Championship. Chiefs versus Patriots, the number one seed Kansas City Chiefs coming up against the home run hitters New York Patriots, who seem to always make it to the Super Bowl, as they did last year. This year, they're going again with a 37-31 over the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, this one ended in overtime. A very quiet first half, a 14-0 lead for the New England Patriots. Tyler, as I was saying at the party, Kansas City, they did this last time they faced the Patriots. They came back and scored most of their touchdowns in the second half. We see Mahomes doing the same thing here, tying it up 31-31 going into overtime. Then New England won the coin toss, and like you and I were saying, whoever wins the coin toss seems to have won in this game, because both offenses were so prolific in the second half, New England getting their 6 points there. The big thing here for me...
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. You jump in. Go ahead.
The fact is that Brady got lucky. He got lucky with the fact of the coin toss. He got lucky with the roughing the passer call. He got lucky with the Hogan catch. The late call and the freaking offsides in the neutral zone. He got lucky. I mean, the stars were somehow freaking aligned for Brady, even though he's already won it like 6 times. And yet and the fact that Kansas City's defense is just so bad. I think the Rams are gonna either destroy Brady, or they're gonna, it's gonna be a good game and Rams are gonna win, because Brady in so many different areas got lucky. I mean he had his lucky horseshoe with his lucky rabbit foot up his butt again, and somehow was able to pull it across.
I mean, yeah, he did not get hit. Like, it's crazy that he was so well protected that entire game. And that is what I'm going to be interested to see with the Rams, is if they get pressure on him, how's that going to impact him? And Gronkowski is a freaking cheat code. Like, you see him lined up out wide, and the best person to cover him is a recovering Eric Berry. Now, Eric Berry is a fantastic football player. He's only playing in, like, his third game since coming back from a torn Achilles, and he's your best guy to cover Gronkowski? There's some problems there anyway, but they've totally pulled the Kevin Durant here with him. You know, last year, Kevin Durant did very little for the Warriors during the regular season. And then in the playoffs, he took control, especially the championship series. And that's kind of what they've got Gronk doing now. He's been a bit of a non-factor all year long, but then these last two games, it's been like, oh, okay, well, you're completely rested. We're just going to throw the ball to you.
He's a rusted Megatron. He is a rusted, just like, wheels are falling off, oil's leaking. I mean, the steering wheel's crooked. I mean, he is just like a person that's been surgically put together and somehow has been cleaned up a little bit, but still running like he's 55 years old and it looks like a rusted robot from The Wizard of Oz. I mean, I don't know how he does it still. And I think he's going to retire at the end of this year.
Especially if they win.
Especially if they win, even though they're not. but Kansas City has no defense. They're ranked dead last. Like, they might as well be 35th in defense because out of 32 teams, because they're just so bad. And Brady, yes, he made some good throws here and there, but he just got lucky. He got lucky.
The best move that the Patriots made for this year was drafting Sony Michel. Like, I know James White's a great back out of the backfield for them to throw the ball to, especially, but in a game like this, and even last week, having him to be able to just run the ball and take a lot of that pressure off of Brady, like, that is the move of the year for this team. I know they've changed the offense around and changed their personnel sets and whatever, but having Sony Michel in the backfield is why they are here.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, as they say in fantasy, Sony Michel could be a league winner here for the Patriots as well, as many fantasy teams out there. Just the consistency that you're talking about, Drew. He had some injuries down the stretch, but in playoffs, he has been consistent. He's been able to take that load off Brady. Brady, obviously aging, he can still throw the ball extremely well. At the same point, you don't want to have him overthrow it if you don't need to. Sony Michel with almost 30 carries in this game, too. Two touchdowns on the board, and then James White relieving that pressure out wide, as well as Edelman. And then Gronkowski, he might have rust, but boy, he is hard to tackle still. 13.2-yard average as well. I mean, the guy is huge. Rob Gronkowski is a big man. So even if you're having back issues, just him catching the ball, it's going to take a minute to take him down. So he's a huge weapon for them. Chris Hogan also making some clutch catches as well, and Rex Burkhead playing a good role too. The Patriots are a complete team. Kansas City is definitely not the greatest defensive team, and the Patriots are definitely not that well defensively themselves, but I think it's going to be a lot better Super Bowl than you're thinking, Tyler. I mean, the Rams' defense is good, and my question for the Patriots is, how are they going to do against the upfront rush? Because you have big nose tackles on that team for the Rams, and I don't know if the Patriots will be able to deal with that as well as the outside pressure they had from Kansas City here. If they can stop them, though, I think the Patriots are looking pretty darn good in this next game. Rams' defense is definitely the biggest question mark for them, though.
Who have the Patriots lost to?
Let me check. We had that's
anybody
preseason.
Anybody want to guess?
Oh, it's a guess.
Let's see. I'm trying to remember.
They lost a lot early, if I remember correctly.
I know they lost to Pittsburgh.
No.
Did they not? I thought they did.
They didn't. Yes, they did lose to Pittsburgh.
Okay, because that was one of the times I was cheering for, I actually would have been okay. Or no, that's right. I was cheering for Pittsburgh to beat the Patriots and then for Pittsburgh to lose the rest of the games, which they did.
Yeah, the Bills are picking up Antonio Brown.
Sure. Did they lose to the Dolphins? It was the Dolphins or
the
Bills,
Dolphins.
Right?
That was unfortunate. That was pretty funny, though. That was Gronk eating it like a... like a fat man chasing after a little kid who stole his ice cream.
My gosh.
That's what that looked like.
Oh, and the Titans beat him. The Titans they beat did. Him big.
They did, 34-10.
That wasn't the game Henry went off, was it?
No.
No, I'm trying to remember how they beat them so big. I guess I think they just jumped on him early.
Yep,
I can't remember, though.
So we have Pittsburgh, we have Tennessee, Jacksonville. believe it or not.
Oh yeah, that was before that train fell apart.
Yeah, in Miami. And so what these teams have in common that beat the Patriots is they have good defenses, and they were able to compete with the Patriots on a level above and beyond what Kansas City can ever play at. And that's what the Rams are going to be able to do, is they're going to have Brady think in his understanding. They're going to have to have Brady do things that Brady has done. But it's going to be very difficult for him. So that's going to be a big factor. And Brady's going to prepare, and, you know, Belichick's going to prepare and everything. But the big thing is the defense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you in that sense. I think if the Rams are going to win the game, it's going to be through their defense and through their running game. The use of both their running backs, I think, would be key in this matchup. And the fact that they didn't use Todd Gurley in the last matchup, and they could moving forward, could be interesting to see how the Patriots transition to that after not seeing him for a week. Obviously, there's game film out there, but a few weeks can make a big difference there. So between the running game and the defense, those are the things the Patriots have to overcome. At the same point, we're looking at two of the most legendary player-coach combo, or the most legendary player-coach combo in the game, in Brady and Belichick. I think they're going to have a way of coming about things here. The Jaguars, I'll give you, they were a great defense. Those other three, I think they were good at times throughout the season. I wouldn't say they were at the best when they played the Patriots, though. Tennessee obviously putting up a crazy scoreline out of nowhere in that one, though.
Holding them to 10 is...
Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy. But Tennessee was not playing like that in their other games, I don't feel like. So I think that was more the fact you had Matt Patricia there bringing in some of the play calling.
I mean, it makes sense that Patriots-Rams would be in 2019. 2002, Patriots and Rams played each other in Super Bowl, who knows what. Yeah, fact check someone. And so the Patriots won that game, and now it's only fair to say that, being that this is Brady's last game, Rams are going to beat the New England Patriots.
I got to say, I love that the Rams are going to wear throwback uniforms for this game. I don't know if you guys saw that, but I love that they're going to pull out the blue and gold classics for the Super Bowl. I think that's pretty darn cool. I had another point that I was going to make. Oh, I have a lot of respect for Todd Gurley. I don't know if you guys saw his interview after the game, or if you've seen any of the highlights of it since, but he straight up said that he was playing like crap and they were right to take him out. And he's sorry that he was playing so badly. And he's just so excited that Anderson came in and was able to do what he did, and that he just really hopes he can contribute in 2 weeks. Like, that's huge for a leader like that on that team to be able to say, I did bad and I deserve to be out of that game, and then to still be like on the sideline looking positive and cheering his teammates on and stuff. That's incredible. And I think that speaks a lot to the character of this team. And that's one of the reasons I am actually excited for this game. I was very disappointed yesterday, since neither of the teams I wanted to win won. But having had some time to think about it, I am excited for the Super Bowl. I think it can be very entertaining just because of guys like that. I also like that Todd Gurley and Sony Michel are going to play against each other, because they crossed paths at Georgia together.
Well, and there's a huge storyline here as well. I mean, you have one of the oldest quarterbacks and coaches in the league up against one of the youngest quarterbacks and coaches in the league. I think that in and of itself is kind of cool, in a sense. It's like a passing the torch type of game, in a sense. Like, yes, the Patriots can still win, so maybe they can say, hey, the rookies are still too green. At the same point, you could have a younger coaching quarterback combo here be the next Brady and Belichick of the next era. I personally don't think Goff is that great. I mean, he's a good quarterback, but I don't think he's a Brady great quarterback. McVay, though, has really made a name for himself as a young head coach in the league. So I think that storyline, as well as all these other crazy storylines going on, is a huge one to watch.
It's too early for Goff to be Brady. I mean, Brady didn't become Brady overnight. I mean, Brady came what he could do in 3, 4, 5 seasons. I mean, Goff hasn't proved himself. And yes, they've surrounded a bunch of talent around Goff, without a doubt, with Gurley and with a good defense. But I think Goff, I don't think he's, yeah, he still has a lot to prove. So it's not as easy as people think.
I mean, controversial opinion. I don't think, I mean, he is definitely now, but early on and for the first even half of his career, I don't think Brady was an amazing quarterback. He was more than good enough. He was probably even great. But he was surrounded by a lot of talent and had a great system and a coach who could adapt that system to anything. He learned to make plays. He was always smart, and he just became this elite thing that he is now. But you have quarterbacks that come into the league that they're just elite on their own, and it takes their team and other teams time to catch up with them. I'll say like Peyton Manning, like his biggest weakness was always that the team was just never caught up to him. And in the long run, people are going to remember Tom Brady a lot more than they remember Peyton Manning, as much as that hurts me, because of what Tom Brady's been able to do with an entire team around him. I'm not getting into the argument of which is the better quarterback, because they're both amazing, especially like at the end of their careers. But I see a lot of Tom Brady in Jared Goff, in that he's making great plays as a young guy. He's got a great coach and great talent around him. And if he can continue to elevate his game a little every year and every game and get to that football intelligence level that Tom Brady is at now and can just control the game and every facet of it, it's doable. He's got the talent to be Tom Brady, but can he actually do it?
And he definitely has a Brady-like style in the sense he sits back, he watches his talented wide receivers, and he threads the needle when he needs to. When you look at Patrick Mahomes, he's more like a Michael Vick style, if you ask me. He's a run-and-gun style quarterback. He makes the crazy plays that no one expects. He can throw the ball so fast and so accurately, just like we saw Vick when he was in his prime with the Falcons. When you look at Goff, again, it's just like Brady. He sits back. If he can find a line like they have in New England, I think we could see some similar stuff from Goff. At the same point, like Tyler said, he still has a lot to prove in that sense.
I'd say Mahomes is like Rodgers.
I was thinking Brett Favre, but no, I don't think Rodgers.
I give you Favre more than Rodgers.
I mean, Mahomes has got a cannon.
Gosh, oh, yeah, super cannon.
So, Mahomes has like a bazooka.
So, I know we want to talk college basketball, but I don't know if we'll have time, but I do have to ask this question just because I think we kind of skimmed over it. Does the NFL need to change its overtime rules? Did I miss that in Tyler's rant?
No, we didn't. Yeah. But that was the next thing I was going to bring up, actually, because it's a huge controversy. When you look at college football, they get each team gets a chance at the ball. In the NFL now, if the first team that wins the coin toss scores a touchdown, especially in a high-scoring affair like the Chiefs and Patriots, I personally don't like that. I think the other team needs a chance. Right now, the rules state if the first team scores a field goal, the second team gets a chance. If they score a touchdown, it's over. If they score a field goal, it ties, and then whoever scores next wins. But currently, if the first team who wins the coin toss scores a touchdown, it is over. I think that's really negative in far as shootout games go, like we saw here with the Patriots and the Chiefs.
They're not going to do it this year, but I would say in the next decade, if football's still around, they're going to change it to where we can't get shootout, because it has become more of an offensive league. In this rule, and it's just recent that they changed it to, you know, oh, if you get field goal range, you can win the game. Within the last three years, I think maybe 2 years, where they changed that rule. So I don't think it's gonna be a while. I think they're gonna review more pass interference calls. They're gonna review penalties more before they change the overtime rules. And the only reason why we're bringing this up is because we had four great teams who we knew if any of them got the ball in overtime, 98% chance of them winning the game, scoring a touchdown, unless you're Drew Brees and throws a pick.
Right. And, you know, in that case, then the overtime rules didn't matter because they turned it over and that was that. Mm-hmm. I found myself thinking about this and my immediate reaction was, yes, we need to change this rule. And I still think we should, just for entertainment's sake. But if you want to think about it, it took the Patriots 13 plays to score a touchdown, and twice it was 3rd and 10. The Chiefs had opportunities. No, sorry. 3 times it was 3rd and 10 on that game-winning drive in overtime. Get off the field. Get a stop on 3rd and 10. That's one of the easiest third downs to stop. Make them kick a field goal and get the ball back. But from an entertainment standpoint, it would have been a lot more fun to then see Pat Mahomes come out there and try to answer that.
This is just a pet peeve of mine. I hate when defenses drop everyone back in these situations, and that's what we saw a lot with Kansas City. They didn't go straight prevent, but they dropped so many people back, and they kept allowing for those cut routes. It felt like Edelman was cutting over, Hogan was cutting over, Gronkowski was going on post routes. It just felt like those same plays over and over and over, and the Patriots just kept completing them. And then when Kansas City finally stopped them, they got called on an offsides penalty because Kansas City lined up in the neutral zone.
Oh,
that's the stuff
so
that bugs
offsides.
Me. Like, why change your defensive scheme that has worked decently throughout the... I mean, okay, obviously this case in particular, Kansas City got scored on a lot, but they were doing a lot better in certain parts of the game using different defensive schemes. I don't like the fact they completely changed their game plan, or at least as a spectator, it seemed like they'd get going into overtime. That's my rant. So overtime, Tyler thinks it's going to be wild. Drew, do you see it happening soon? Any changes?
I'm going to bet there's going to be something about it in, with the collective bargaining agreement because of player safety and those kind of things that I know are going to be a conversation. I don't know what the change will be, but I think that's when we'll start seeing the conversations, at least.
Okay, I like it. We'll have to wait and see on that one. With that, guys, that'll end us for NFL, AFC, and NFC Championship weekend. We have the Super Bowl in 2 weekends with the Pro Bowl between them. Next week, we are talking college basketball because we have Drew's Tennessee Volunteers on top in the number one spot above the Duke Blue Devils right now, that powerhouse team. Can Tennessee last? We'll find out next week. For now, hit us up on Twitter at CAMB Podcast, or feel free to email us at CAMBpodcast@otnmedia.org. Last but not least, if you like what we do here at OTN and on this show, come at me, bro. Hit us up on Patreon, patreon.com/OTN. Thanks again for listening, guys, and we'll catch you next week.
You know, if Gase was the referee, he would have saw that call.